On today's episode of It's Always Something in Philadelphia, I, Alec Leach, am going to ride this one solo since Kenny Adkins is out of town. You all saw what happened last night. Sixers lost Game 7 to the Atlanta Hawks at home, and their season is now over, and they go into probably the most pivotal offseason of this era of Sixers basketball, and arguably the most important one of the last 20 years. So, I got nothing else. So without any further ado, here is the intro from Harry DeMarco. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whenever you listen to this, you know who I am, Alec Leach. It's episode 32 of It's Always Something in Philadelphia. Really not much to... I feel like I don't really even have to give the context, but I will. Sixers lose Game 7 to the Hawks in just insane fashion. Just only a way that the Sixers can do it. Figured after Game 6 that they could kind of come home after forcing Game 7, winning an elimination game on the road. I figured they could just, you know, find a way to win, and even though it would be the ugliest way possible, to scrap their way into the conference finals. And then we feel somewhat good about the overall season that this was, despite playing a absolute catastrophe of a series against the Hawks. But the Sixers clearly had other plans. Embiid, once again, was not at his best, which is understandable. I am not going to be that guy who critiques his play, because he wasn't really himself. I really don't want to put too much blame on Embiid, because he played with a torn meniscus. He put his body on the line for the Sixers, and not many other guys on this team stepped up to help him out. We're probably going to spend the entire episode on Ben Simmons, so I'm not going to lead with that. Doc Rivers once again came up short in the playoffs with an inability to adjust. And Tobias Harris had several mediocre games, just completely uninspiring, which is a huge juxtaposition with his first round performance against the Wizards. He had a great series against the Wizards, but against the Hawks, a team who really arguably had almost as bad of a wing defense as the Wizards, because DeAndre Hunter was hurt. Their best wing defender was like freaking Danilo Gallinari. Harris still couldn't get it done for the most part. He continued to be a mid-range Hunter that didn't really hit too many of those shots. And far too often, especially in Game 7, he just missed shot after shot, inside, outside. His interior presence was lacking. It was going to be impossible to win a game in which Tobias Harris played like he did last night, and Embiid wasn't at his best, and Ben Simmons is playoff Ben Simmons. When the three of them are all playing like that, it's a miracle to think that you can win a playoff game. And the Hawks, to their credit, took advantage. Even in a game where Trae Young played terribly, Trae Young had, let me bring up a stat line real quick. I should probably cut this. Game 7, he has 21 points, which is a lot more than you would have thought. 10 assists, which is pretty good, but he took 23 shots, was 2 of 11 from downtown, and only took 11 free throws. You have to win a game where he plays like that. For Kevin Huerter to be the leading scorer for the Hawks and just completely take advantage of Seth Curry, and at points Tobias Harris too, on offense. I mean, Huerter kind of attacked Seth Curry the whole series, and Seth's defense was definitely not great, except for like in Game 6. For the most part, the Hawks were targeting him because they could. They had the right collection of players who can all kind of you know, punish a defensive liability. Does that mean that they were better than the Sixers? No, but they certainly played like it in this series. Their roster contract in general just kind of made more sense. They had at any time 3 to 4 guys between Trae Young, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Kevin Huerter, Danilo Gallinari, and before DeAndre Hunter got hurt, him too, to where these guys can make stuff happen off the dribble, and they also make sense into a cohesive offense because they all can shoot. They all can shoot and dribble and make plays for others. The buildup of that, when you have so many different prongs in an offense that can do that, it makes it a lot easier to just, you know, just draw up a play where you just force a switch of, say, Seth Curry onto Trae Young and let the rest of the guys space out and, yeah, go to work. It's a lot easier to create good offense that way. The Sixers still should have won this series. I'm not saying that the Hawks were better, but it did help that the Hawks had that kind of construct around Trae Young that just made sense. Which really gets into the overarching problem with the Sixers is that they don't fit together. This is a team that we've known this. We've known that Simmons and Embiid are not the most ideal fit. We've known that Tobias Harris, because of his unwillingness to shoot threes for the most part, every now and again he'll take like 3 or 4 threes in a game and it'll come as a surprise to everybody. But overall, that big three is just not... It's not really conducive to winning because you're built around Embiid, who is best off in the post and can sometimes shoot and has modified his game to fit the rest of the team. Ben Simmons, who doesn't have an outside threat and honestly isn't that good of a finisher or a free throw shooter either. And Tobias Harris, who works best in the mid-range. Your three best players are all best in this like very confined space. That's not a winning formula. Now, aggregately, they have more talent, like, individually, than the Hawks, but the sum of the Hawks' parts overplayed their whole. Their whole overplayed the sum of their parts, excuse me. And that just made it easier for them to create good offense against a team that basically shit itself. The Sixers blew this series in so many different ways. One of which being Ben Simmons just being a zero once again. And just, again, I'm going to spend a lot of time on him, especially in the mailbag. And we're going to spend a lot of time talking about him all season. But even though his free throws weren't falling, and even though the Hawks didn't even have to do Hakkabin in Game 7 because they won everywhere else. That part is arguably the most frustrating, but the fact that the Hawks could do that to Ben Simmons and really get in his head and just allow him to psychologically spiral into this very, basically, he was a zero on offense for the last several games of the series, except for in Game 3 when he spent that second half just absolutely demolishing Hawks defenders, which is what he's supposed to do, because their wing defenders, as I said multiple times, were not great. He did that, and then we never saw it again. Last night, he was especially tentative. There were so many possessions where he had a chance to force a transition opportunity, just go straight at the Hawks' throats. Or I guess on a bird, it's the gullet. And he just didn't. He just straight up was afraid to go at anybody because he knew he'd get fouled and he knew he wouldn't make the free throws. And that is just not conducive to winning a playoff series. And, you know, I really feel like I feel stupid for defending him as much as I did. Sometimes I really do feel... I feel like I wasted so much energy just believing that he would be part of a winning formula for a playoff team with Joel Embiid, but... It's clear that they have to be broken up. So I guess I'll just lead right into one of the first mailbag questions. This is from Jack Manuel. He at the man JBT, he runs the Brooklyn Buzz with Nick Fay. Sorry for your loss, guys. You can feel way better about it than I do. Do the Sixers have to trade Simmons? And yeah, they do. There's no way you can bring back this roster next year. Embiid's already starting to call out Simmons, which honestly, props to him for being as nice as he was over the last few years. He never disparaged Simmons to the press. He was asked all kinds of questions. The media pressure on the Embiid-Simmons partnership has been deliberate, and it has been trying to create a rift between these two. And Embiid, to his credit, just did. He was completely cordial to the press all the way up until last night when, this is per Rich Hoffman, who did delete the tweet because he felt like the quote was taken out of context, but Embiid said when he felt like the game changed last night when an open dunk turned into 1 point. And the play he's referring to is when Simmons was underneath the basket, wide open, and because he was afraid to get fouled, he dumped it off to Matisse Thybulle, who was double-teamed and got fouled and went to the line and made one of two free throws. So he went from an easy two into 1 point. And Embiid, his reaction is on Twitter somewhere. I forget who posted the video, but he was very frustrated at the time, and he was clearly frustrated after the game too, and no one's going to blame him, and nobody should be blaming Embiid either. Anyone who blames Embiid for the outcome of this series will be banned from the Always Something in Philadelphia podcast. Just putting that out there. I don't know, man. I guess we can do the rest of the Simmons questions now, because I'm already on this tangent. What's the realistic package we could get for Simmons? This is a question from Vinny. You all know Vinny. He is our resident Eagles writer, and he has hopped on the pod multiple times. He actually wanted to come on this one, but timing didn't work out, so I'll get him on at some point in the offseason. A realistic package for him? Look, the thing with NBA trades, and this is the hardest part for most people, is that the salaries incoming and outgoing have to match. So Simmons is making $31.6 million next year, $33.9 million the year after that, $36.3 million the year after that, and $38.6 million the year after that. He is one of the longest signed players to date. The only ones who have longer contracts at the moment are Giannis, Rudy Gobert, and the 2017 draft class of Donovan Mitchell, De'Aaron Fox, Bam Adebayo, Jason Tatum. Those are the only guys with longer contracts than Simmons right now. So that matters. For reference, Simmons makes the exact same amount of money over the next few years as Jamal Murray because they're both from the same draft class and they got the max. So matching money with him is not going to be easy. The easiest way for another team to do it would be to take a bunch of mid-sized contracts and put it together with a few draft picks for Simmons. But obviously, the Sixers are not in that type of position. They need immediate talent, and they need it in a very specific way. So getting something less than like a high-level starter for Simmons is not going to sit well with the organization or the fan base. They're going to be looking for a guard who can make plays off the dribble but also make sense off the ball as a shooter. Basically everything that Simmons was not. That guy, though, is pretty difficult to find. A lot of Sixers fans will be pointing to Damian Lillard or Bradley Beal, but those organizations watch this postseason too. It's not like they just ignored what Ben Simmons did in the postseason. There is no world in which the Blazers give up Damian Lillard for Ben Simmons and a bunch of picks. It's not happening. That's a non-starter for them. As for the Wizards, they seem keen on building something around Bradley Beal for the meantime. I don't know what kind of trade package the Sixers could put together that would justify the Wizards trading Beal, but also not really going to a full rebuild. That's the same logic with any other team that trades its star, as if they're trading their best player, they're going into a full rebuild. And Ben Simmons, at his figure and entering his prime for the next several years, you're not hitting reset. You're kind of just treading the line of mediocrity. Not because of Simmons' skill set, although one would argue that. It's more so just the direction you take. You either choose Simmons or you choose a bunch of draft picks like the Rockets did in the James Harden trade. And for the most part, teams will opt for the latter. What's the most realistic package? God, fans, the listeners are going to hate me for this one. D'Angelo Russell is a possibility. He is a distressed asset on another team. After having kind of a career resurgent year with the Nets a few years ago, he's been pretty mediocre in Golden State and Minnesota. He makes money comparable to Simmons, and he is a significant talent downgrade. But he's also more of a fit. D'Angelo Russell and stuff from the Timberwolves is definitely... It's going to be offered, and it's possible that it's a non-starter for the Sixers organization, but that's an example of a player. I listened to Zach Lowe's podcast, The Low Post, and he said CJ McCollum, and that might be the best, like... the best player that the Sixers can get for Simmons at this rate. The problem is McCollum's not a point guard. He's not a normal guy who can just run your offense, and that's exactly what the Sixers need. And he's also kind of small. You're basically, if you trade for CJ McCollum, you're just getting a better version of Seth Curry. And we know from Seth Curry's days as a Blazer that him and McCollum weren't, that pairing is not ideal for the playoffs because they're both undersized guards. So, I like the idea of Malcolm Brogdon, potentially, but I don't know why the Pacers do that, why they would add Ben Simmons to a core of Domantas Sabonis and Miles Turner. They have to work out their front court first, I think, before getting into any sort of Simmons talk. I saw John Hollinger put out today Zach LaVine for Ben Simmons. I got his justification from the Bulls' perspective. I just disagree. I don't know why the Bulls would do that. They'd basically be shifting around resources from having a scoring guard who can dribble and shoot to Ben Simmons and Nikola Vucevic as their core. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't know why they do that. Even though, like, cap wise, it does make sense for the Bulls to sell high on LaVine. I don't think that would be selling high, really. From a value prop standpoint, it doesn't really make sense. After that, it's gonna probably be a combination of, like, solid contracts. Like, oh god, we're gonna do this all off season. The other type of team that could go after him is like a rebuilding team who wants to buy low on a disgruntled star. And the Oklahoma City Thunder are a prime example of that. They can definitely send Kemba Walker the Sixers' way and some stuff. I think that would be a major L for the Sixers if they just swapped Simmons for Kemba Walker. But if the Thunder throw in an extra first or two, it might get the Sixers talking. I think the Sixers just need to receive immediate talent for Simmons. That's what it has to be. They're not in the market for picks. They can't be. If Embiid sees a Simmons trade that involves a bunch of draft picks or young players, he's not going to be happy. And we've seen what an unhappy Embiid looks like. We saw in the 2019-20 season when they built a team of power forwards around a center. Embiid was pretty pissed off the whole year, and no one will blame him. I don't even know how to transition to the next part of this, man. Doc Rivers, he was one of the main pillars of the Sixers losing this series, was Doc Rivers. The first one being Simmons, which we've discussed ad nauseum. Another one being the overall roster construct, which partly does include Simmons. And the third part is Doc. I think those are the three pillars of why the Sixers lost this series. Rivers refused to adjust time and time again. He was just... he stuck to his regular season rotation, didn't change it a lick, didn't go into this series, like, with any sort of revolutionary game plan for how to defend Trae Young. He kind of just let Trae Young win Game 1. The Hawks built up a huge freaking lead at halftime of Game 1 that the Sixers couldn't overcome despite their best efforts at the end. It was just too big of a lead to overcome, and it's mostly Rivers' fault why they lost Game 1. Games 4 and 5 were not completely his fault, but he was a very big part of them. His rotations were awful. He continued to play Simmons and Dwight Howard together when that was obviously something. It didn't even work in the regular season. So I don't know how you expect it to work in the playoffs like any better. And there were times where he played Simmons, Howard, and Thibault together. That's ridiculous. How do you expect that to work? That's two non-shooters and a sort of shooter who just spaces the floor sometimes because he needs to, because he's a wing. But other than that, that's not conducive to winning. One of the worst triads of the Sixers, like, lineup combinations this year was Simmons, Tobias Harris, and Dwight Howard. And time again, the Sixers went to it. And it didn't make any sense. There were so many lineups that didn't make sense. Only, like, a few times in games 6 and 7 did I see Doc Rivers deploy a lineup in this series that made sense, which was, like, just a bunch of guards, Thybul at the nominal 4, and Embiid kind of stuff. Like, that... I just don't get it. I don't get why it took him so long to make any sort of adjustment. I don't get why he didn't make this certain adjustments at all. It was a masterclass in how you don't coach a playoff series. And this isn't the first time that we've seen Doc Rivers do this. There were legitimate concerns about him as a playoff coach after last postseason when he was the Clippers coach and he blew the series against the Nuggets because he refused to deviate from the Lou Williams-Montrezl Harrell duo. He did it yet again this postseason. And granted, you know, I was a lot more infuriated with him last night, but after reevaluating things, he was a problem, but he was not the problem. The problem was the roster contract, mainly the combination of Simmons and Embiid together, which everybody outside of Philadelphia has been saying that for a long time. A lot of people in Philadelphia said it. Take your victory laps. I got nothing else to say on that. You won. You were right. All of you who said that the Simmons and Embiid partnership could not work, you were right. And I feel like an absolute dunce for defending it as long as I did. Well, one of the mailbag questions that I think can turn things around here is from Cameron. He co-hosts Celtics Lab. The most enjoyable part of the postseason, all things considered. I appreciate the sweetener there from Cam. Most enjoyable part for the Sixers, really? Probably Embiid's absolute dominance in a few of the games, just making Clint Capella, who was almost an all-defensive center, look like a middle schooler. He took Capella to town when he could. Him playing through a meniscus the way he did, it was pretty awesome. Embiid deserves so much credit for this year. Another part, Tyrese Maxey in Game 6. That was a pretty cool thing to see. Granted, in Games 1 and 2 of the Hawks series, he didn't do great. But Maxey looks like a really nice piece for the Sixers to have in the near future. Or a trade asset, which would suck, but understandable in the right trade. Yeah, so thanks to Cameron for that question. Another one, I guess we can just move away from criticizing the given roster and more so moving into what the Sixers can do next. So this question is from Nate. He goes, where will He Who Shall Not Be Named, number 25, play next year? This kind of connects to Vinny's question from earlier. The team that I think he's most likely to get traded to is probably... The Thunder have been talked about a lot. Basically, any rebuilding team that wants to take a chance on him. I don't think a contender's going to. So I think if you're a team that didn't have many stakes last year and kind of wants to get back in on the fun... Try and bring up another one real quick. I could see the Cavs. Probably not. Maybe the Raptors. There could be a Kyle Lowry-Simmons swap going in there, but there'd have to be a lot of other stuff going to Philly and to Toronto to make either team happy. That could just be a mess of a trade that nobody wins. I'd say either OKC or Toronto would be the most likely destinations for Simmons. Thank you for the question, Nate. Another one from Designer Smarf, one of the other co-hosts of the Celtics Lab podcast, which you can find on otgbasketball.com. Should Doc Rivers be the coach next year? No, but he's going to be because he's making $10 million a year over the next 3 or 4 years. Like, I don't think that Sixers governorship is going to just concede $40 million because people got mad about a playoff series. I don't think they're going. It's a bigger mistake. And quite honestly, Rivers has won championships before. He won, his last one was in 2008, but you can win with Doc Rivers as your coach. It's not, that's not really the problem. It's just that he blew so many opportunities. But if the Sixers roster was better, things would be different, which gets into the real thing that the Sixers have to improve this year and why they paid Daryl Morey the big bucks is other than a Simmons trade, there's gonna have to be other moves that they make. Whatever they get for Simmons, which ideally would be a win now player or two very, very good starters to high end backups in the Seth Curry range, just double it and put them at different positions, kind of thing. There's gonna be some serious moves made. Daryl Morey is now on the clock. This is his time to shine. This is why he makes the big bucks, and it's go time for Morey. And I bet he's already working the phones. He's already working his fake trade machine. He probably was before this postseason started. He wanted to trade Simmons before now, but he didn't really get the opportunity, which is fine. I mean, he tried to include him in the Harden trade, but the Rockets asked for Simmons and Maxey and like a few firsts, so I understand why Morey did not make that push. And even though results don't justify process, Harden did miss a good portion of the postseason, and he played games 5, 6, and 7 with a bad hamstring. So, you know, maybe he wouldn't have been available for the Sixers either. He would have made things a lot better, though, that's for sure. It's Simmons, he's going to have to find a good trade for Simmons. He's going to have to make other moves on the margins. The Sixers actually have a bunch of free agents this year. One of which is Danny Green. One of which is Furkan Korkmaz. Danny Green, Mike Scott, Dwight Howard, and Furkan Korkmaz are their four main free agents. Everybody else is pretty much locked up. They will have 5 roster spots to fill because Harris is locked up, Embiid's locked up, Simmons is here for now, although he'll probably be broken up into multiple players. George Hill and his non-guaranteed figure for next year are still here. His non-guaranteed figure is $10 million. Which he definitely didn't play up to in the postseason. That trade actually looks like a loss for Morey, even though at the time everyone liked it, and I still defended it. Just didn't work out. Seth Curry making a criminally low amount of money. Thibault on his rookie contract. Maxey in the second year of his rookie contract. Shake Milton on one of the best bargains in the league. Isaiah Joe on his technically not a rookie scale contract, but it is, and Paul Reed on the same figure. So they will have to, I think, and they'll, just before making any moves, they'll be at just under $128 million in cap figures. So they'll be pushing the luxury tax before even making a move, which means between Danny Green and Furkan Korkmaz, they will have to choose one. There will be a lot of debates over which player the Sixers should keep in the coming weeks to months for free agency. They can't keep both because that would cause the Sixers to be way in the luxury tax with a team that honestly isn't good enough to be in there. So if you have to pick one, I would pick Korkmaz. I think that that's the I think that's the more reasonable one because he's significantly younger and his defense really, I mean, he's only 23 years old. Danny Green is 33. And Danny Green's defense is like, it's fine, but it's not a game changer. While as Korkmaz's offense, I think can be a game changer. And I think that the Sixers should do everything in their power to keep him around. as long as the price is not too outlandish. If they're not going to get priced out of both, so it's possible that they kind of let the market fall to either one. But I think they do have to keep one of those two and probably stock up on another wing, a cheaper version of either Danny Green or Furkan Korkmaz, somebody that, you know, can give the same kind of role but at a much lower price, which Daryl Morey is infamous for doing. He's going to have to do it again. And that kind of, and then whatever they get for Simmons, those are the two main talking points of the offseason, two focuses of the Sixers, is how do they approach the Simmons trade market and which wing are you keeping? And how do you fill the void of the other one? Those three things. Now, the Sixers do have their own first this year, I believe. So that's a plus. But other than that, and they have a bunch of mid-tier salaries, such as George Hill, to fill into any trade. But they'll also need a backup center, preferably one who can shoot. And there's also the chance of a Tobias Harris trade at some point, but I doubt it this year. It's just that'd be a lot to move around in one offseason. But it's possible. We've seen Daryl Morey do some pretty crazy stuff in recent years. So whatever they get for Simmons and how they approach the wing position are the two things that are going to determine how good of a team this is next season. And it better be a really good one, because Embiid's not going to stick around to watch just, yeah. He's not going to stick around for another, like, sort of good but not good enough team. While I transition to the next talking point, I just want to bring up that this episode is brought to you by Vigit. Vigit is the first social media app for sports bettors. You can check how the lines are moving on there. You can post your own bets compared to how other people are doing. You just make an account with our code PHILLY. The link is in every episode that we've published since Vigit became our sponsor. And yeah, have fun betting. Because I certainly didn't this postseason. I did bet on the Sixers to win this series, which obviously did not go well. But as we move along, to sum up this season, let's take a broader view of the entire season on its whole. Let's put a bow on the 2020-21 Sixers. Joel Embiid had an amazing year. His regular season was one of the best in Sixers history. He finished second in most valuable player voting for a reason. He could have been first if he had played all his games, but all things considered, he was pretty healthy the whole year, and that's good. That's a really good sign, especially in a year where basically every other team in the league got COVID or suffered from serious injuries because of the lack of time in between off seasons from the bubble to now. So, all things considered, solid outcome. I think we all can be worried about Embiid's meniscus, because it's possible that when you play through a meniscus, you make it significantly worse. But for now, I think there's a lot of good to take away from Embiid, especially playing for a team that didn't have the ideal spacing around him. He was still able to be a monster. So I think going into next year, we can really, really be happy with Embiid. As long as he's upright, he will make the Sixers a championship contender. They just have to put the right pieces around him. Tobias Harris had a pretty good reclamation project this year, up until the postseason. He averaged, let's look at his averages real quick. He was at 19.5 points a game, 6.8 rebounds, 3.5 assists, almost a steal and almost a block a game. He shot 51% from the field. That's actually better than I thought. 39% from three, although that number is probably a little flawed because he didn't take that many of them. And he shot almost 90% from the line, but he also only took 3.3 free throw attempts per game. So his shooting numbers were good, there just wasn't enough of them. And I think on a team with a little more spacing and a few more guards, that Harris would be allowed to play this way and it would look better. It was just frustrating because of who the other two stars were, Simmons and Embiid, that he really wasn't a catch-and-shoot guy. He was kind of just a mid-range prober. I think he'll look a lot better next year, just like how going from last year's team to this year's team, he looked a lot better. If he has more space, he's just better. You know, it's pretty crazy how that works. And Seth Curry obviously had a fantastic postseason run, especially in the Hawks series. He shot over 50% from three just in the Hawks series alone. An incredible playoff run for him. And he was pretty good in the regular season. We wish he had taken more threes, but we'll live with it. This postseason, Seth Curry averaged 18.8 points a game, 2.3 assists. He shot 58% from the field, 50.6% from three, and 79% from the line, but that number doesn't really matter. He, on 6.8 attempts a game, he hit over half his threes in the playoffs. That's a player you want to keep around, and he's a very clean fit with Embiid. You see it aesthetically. He can sort of probe in space with the ball, and he's clearly a very good fit with Embiid. It's just a matter of getting more of those guys, and ideally ones that aren't defensive liabilities. I'm not going to blame him for the defense, although he should be discredited for having a poor defensive outing, but he had a lot on his plate offensively in this Hawks series, especially towards the end. The fact that Seth Curry was the shot-creating guard that the Sixers were missing for so long is pretty damning on the roster contract, so only so much you can take away from that. Danny Green was fine. It would have been nice to have him for the playoffs, but obviously we know he got hurt, and he wasn't the difference between the Sixers winning or losing the series. He might have literally been, since it was a Game 7 that they only lost by so many points, but that wasn't the problem with this team. A Danny Green injury wasn't helping them make the finals or anything, so whatever. Danny Green was fine. I loved having him around. Just a matter of how thick his market is, how saturated his market is in free agency. As for the bench, really, it was just a grab bag. It was a mystery box every night what we were going to get from the bench. Shake Milton during the regular season looked really good at times, and at other times he just wasn't hitting shots and kind of just corralled into the he just kind of fell into this lull of only attacking for himself, not really getting other guys involved, and finishing kind of poorly at the rim. He's clearly one of those players who needs to hit shots to be effective. Now, that sounds like a no-duh kind of statement, but there are certain players where when they're hot, they are really, really hot. And we saw an example of this in game three of the Hawks? Doesn't matter anymore. But Shake got hot, and the Sixers were way better off for it. I believe it was Game 3, the Shake Milton game. Or Game 2. And at other times, Tyrese Maxey looked like a legitimate starting NBA point guard. And I think if Simmons is gone and they don't get another like real point guard for Simmons, I think Maxey will be the starter next year. He had some lapses in the playoffs, but I think all rookies have to work through their warts. But when he was on, the offense was his. He was controlling the game like a real point guard can. And he looks so good to Sixers fans because they really haven't had a guy like that. Their best facsimile of that was Ish Smith or Jimmy Butler, who Jimmy Butler didn't really control the game like that. He just was a monopolist of the offense. Maxey truly was a navigator of the offense for the Sixers this year in a way that really nobody else has been in a very long time. So as long as Maxey's here, he's going to be a very important part of the team moving forward, and I really hope he is here. Let's see, who else? Matisse Thybulle, all defense second team, not as great of a shooter, obviously, but he's a unique defender. He did make a few mistakes, especially last night. He fouled Kevin Huerter on a three when the Sixers were like one or two possessions out of the game, and it cost the Sixers dearly, but I will not hold too much against him because he really did, for the most part, play really good defense on Trae Young and whoever else he was guarding. He continued to make an impact throughout the series. And in the postseason this year, he averaged 2.2 stocks. Steals plus blocks was actually lower than I thought it would be. In the regular season, it was 2.7 stocks per game. So a lot to look forward to with Thybulle. He could be one of those guys who gets a a 5-by-5 game, which would be 5 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 blocks, and 5 steals. Obviously, the latter two, steals and blocks, are harder to get, but those seem to be easier for Thybulle to get. He's a true game changer on defense. And I think if the Sixers get a more normal lineup out there next year, he might be able to start some games where you feel comfortable with it. If Simmons is swapped out for more spacing, I think Thybulle could make sense in that lineup, and it would be a lot more justified to close with him than it was last night. Let's see. Korkmaz, already touched on him. I think he's a really good fit with the starters. I think his ability to shoot and sort of make plays off the dribble is really nice. But his defense is obviously a concern. His length kind of plays up in an off-ball defense kind of role, but he's going to get targeted by a lot of advanced offenses. He will be a defensive liability at times. It's just a matter of if he can, A, outweigh that with his spacing on offense, and B, kind of get better at deflecting off those passing lanes, using his length to his advantage. Those will be the things to look forward to from Korkmaz. But I definitely think if the Sixers can keep Korkmaz at a reasonable rate, which I'd say if it's $12 million or less per year, that's an early figure, and I have no idea if free agency's going to work, but I'm just going to ballpark it at 12 million a year. If they can keep him under something like that, I think he should be here long term. I really like him. Dwight Howard, he was very frustrating in the playoffs, and it's not his fault that Doc kept playing him. So there's only so much you can hold against him. He was the definition of a backup center this year. He was rock solid in the regular season. Those lineups weren't great, but he was a defensive anchor most of the year. He was fine. He 8 minutes. That's really all you can ask in a team from a team whose best player is their center in Joel Embiid. All he had to do was survive in the other minutes, and for the most part, he did in the regular season. In the playoffs, he got played off the floor, which was expected. It's just frustrating that Rivers couldn't catch on to that trend soon enough. So, Dwight Howard, wherever he goes after this, I don't know. He'll probably just ring chase on the veterans minimum somewhere. He could be back for another year. I don't know. I'd rather try something else, but whatever. We'll see what the stretch five market is in free agency, which I believe is headlined by Kelly Olynyk, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll see how that goes. Mike Scott, obviously a terrible year. I don't think he'll be back with the team unless it's in a veterans minimum ring chasing sage veteran type of role, in which he's just there to, you know, keep everyone's emotions intact throughout the lulls of the regular season. He's not very good anymore, and that's fine. He's still a very likable guy. Everybody who's ever played with him seems to like him. And he knows his role at this point, which is at best a stretch five. An undersized stretch five. But it's whatever. It just sucks that he made $5 million this year, and that they couldn't use him in salary filler for another trade. But we'll see. We'll see what the future holds, sir. Mike Scott, it's probably nothing crazy. Isaiah Joe and Paul Reed, Paul Reed won G League MVP, so there's only so much you could have expected from the 58th pick in the draft. He should have gone higher. No one's really sure why he fell so far in the 2020 draft as he did, but credit to him, he made the most of his impact in the G League bubble this year. And when he came up, he was clearly a few steps behind in terms of NBA pacing, but I expect him to play a role next year, ideally in the Mike Scott, like, sort of backup 4 minutes that don't really exist, where he's maybe playing, like, 8 minutes one game and then is out the next game because the Sixers want to go to a more wing-heavy forward rotation. That'd be the kind of role I would expect from Reed next year. But a lot to like about him. He's clearly got the defensive tools. He's another stock monster for the most part. It's just his offensive game is very limited at this point. But Isaiah Joe, he's a shooter with length, and he competes on defense. Some would argue he may be a better defender than Furkan Korkmaz at this point. We'll see. next year if Korkmaz is still here. But they do have kind of similar skill sets where they can both have a very quick trigger. They're both really long. They're both, I believe, 6'7", and can get a shot off with a really high release. So I think Isaiah Joe was drafted kind of with the expected departure of Korkmaz in mind, but having both around could not hurt. I really don't think that would hurt. That'd be great, actually, for Embiid. So, yeah, and Isaiah Joe is making $1.5 million next year and $1.8 million the year after that. That's not even fully guaranteed. So it really a lot to like from Daryl Morey's first draft with the Sixers, which was Maxey, Joe, and Reed, and using the other 2 seconds that the Sixers had to, A, get off of Al Horford, B, turn Josh Richardson into Seth Curry. I'd say that's a pretty big win on all those fronts, which is why I'm pretty optimistic about Morey's ability to make this team better in the short run. It's more so about how much better it can get. It's whatever. This whole offseason is going to be decided by, A, what do you do with Doc Rivers, which I don't think he should be the coach next year, but they're not going to fire him. And what do you get for Simmons? Those are the things that we're going to talk about all offseason. So I think this is a pretty good place to wrap it up. I appreciate all the mailbags from everybody. Again, sign up for Viget with our code Philly, PHILLY. And you know where to find me, at Owlic NBA. You can find Kenny at Ken the Ben, our podcast Twitter account at Something Philly. I'll probably be putting fake Simmons trades on the website, alwayssomethingpod.com, in the near future. We'll probably have Vinny on soon to talk about this more. And I hope to have Ken back on next week. But anyway, thanks for listening, guys.